Welcome, birders. This is Ed Pullen, your host on the Bird Banter podcast, where birders talk birding. I've really been having fun getting back into the podcast after taking a winter break this year. The best part for me is meeting my guests. On the last episode, Holly Garrod was my guest, and I was really taken by her passion and knowledge of bird migration and the importance of the Caribbean islands. They are the winter habitat and important migratory stopovers for a lot of the birds that breed here in the north, but winter either in the Caribbean or far south of there. And speaking of guests on the podcast, I was just so pleased and amazed when I opened the last edition of the Birding Magazine from the ABA, the March edition, volume 56, number 1. When I started reading through it, it was like a trip down memory lane for me. I was just boggled. Right at the beginning, the featured photographer in the photo salon is Ryan Rodriguez, who was, I think, my youngest guest ever on the podcast about 3 or 4 years ago when I was visiting the Rio Grande Valley. And then in the memories section, celebration section, Scott Downs and Sierra Downs talked about their 700th and 800th ABA species. Pretty cool father-daughter happening. And then there were articles by Steve Hampton on bird influenza and Holly Merker, a feature article on the health benefits of birding. And then Bryony Angell with the gathering segment. I mean, it's like almost every lead author in the whole magazine, except Peter Harrison, had been guests on the show. I was just boggled. And to make it even better, the editor for this edition was Frank Isaguirre, who was also a best guest on the show. So the Bird Banter podcast was one step ahead of Birding Magazine on these guests. It really made me feel good. Another aspect of birding in time and nature has also come to the forefront in the last few years, and that's the emotional and the health benefits of nature in birding. Hearing birdsong has been shown to lead to physical signs of relaxation and stress reduction. Being near trees can lead to exposure to chemicals and reduce stress hormone levels and can improve health. To hear a lot more on these phenomena, listen to episode 148 with Holly Merker. After talking with Holly and taking time to think about birding differently, I have to admit I spend less time looking for specific birds, chasing, and more time just enjoying birding. My guest on this episode is Courtney Ellis. Courtney's a relative newcomer to birding. She's a great example of a young person who found birding during the pandemic-induced work-from-home relative isolation. I really enjoyed hearing from Courtney and hope you enjoy her story too. I, for one, have pre-ordered her soon-to-be-released book and look forward to reading it. Help me welcome Courtney Ellis to the Bird Banter podcast. Courtney, thanks for being on the podcast with me. How are you today?
I'm well, Ed. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, your publicist contacted me and I looked into your background. I said, this sounds like it could be fun. You have your own podcast and I listened to, I guess you've got a bunch of podcasts actually, but one birding sort of podcast. And I listened to it and it sounds like you're pretty new to birding. I mean, relatively the last few years. How did you kind of discover birding, get into it and seem to have it become an important part of your life so quickly? What's going on?
I think my birding story is fairly common to new birders right now. The pandemic threw me into birding. We were stuck inside and we had to look out our windows, some of us really for the first time, and realized the birds had always been there. And I started, I had young children and, you know, we were doing pandemic schooling and they were on Zoom. And so once a day, my husband, who was also working from home, would take the kids and I'd take an hour and go on a walk. And those walks really saved me. They saved my sanity from being so cooped up in the house, but also they threw me out into nature. And I discovered there were things like warblers and there were things like ibises right here in Southern California. And just the wonder of the world of birds, it made me ask, what else haven't I noticed that's been around me this entire time? So what started as a little flicker of interest, my spark bird was a black Phoebe in our backyard, quickly grew into this fire of passion and delight. And as I say on my podcast, I'm not an expert, but I'm definitely an enthusiast. And I love that birding is this bottomless bowl of interest. You can always learn more about birds. And I'm just starting to scratch the surface these 4 years in, but I'm so excited to learn more.
It is, you know, I get into birding, yeah. I don't know how old you are, but maybe around the same. I was around 30 or so when I got into birding. And it was the same thing. There's no end to learning. I mean, every birder I meet has something they can learn. Some people, it's maybe not a whole lot left, but you can always learn more and you can do it anywhere. I used to hate to go to the beach. For me, I don't like sitting on the ground too much, and I don't like sitting in the sun too much. And going to the beach was just like, I did it because my wife liked it and the family liked it, but it was misery. I just hated it. And then I became a birder, and all of a sudden, it was great. You go to the beach, there's gulls, there's shorebirds, there might be something offshore. And, you go to a city, there's not much around, but there's everywhere. Birding can be done anywhere, all the time, by anyone. It's just a really cool pastime.
I absolutely agree. And I love that the bar to entry is so low. Go look out your window. If you enjoy what you see there, you're a birder. We're welcome to the team, but you can grow into it your entire life. My kids can get into birding, and they have gotten a little bit into birding. I'm still working on my husband. Right now, when we go out on our date nights, he says, you get to give me two bird facts. And after that, we're moving on. But, people with mobility issues can bird. You can bird if you're old, if you're young, if you're rich or if you're poor. The birds are everywhere and have grown to appreciate even those grackles in the grocery store parking lot in a totally new way. So I love that piece of birding. The birds are everywhere.
Well, send one of those grackles in your parking lot up here. It'd be a really good bird in Washington. That's the other thing about birding is, as soon as you go someplace new, wow, you've got all new stuff. I just got back from a long winter trip to Florida and Colombia and Costa Rica. So it's a great trip. But everywhere you go, there's new birds. They might not be new life birds necessarily, but boy, a bird you haven't seen in a few years is almost as good as a life bird. It's new to your current experiences. So yeah, that's another cool thing about it. So Courtney, tell me about yourself. You just got into birding in the last 4 or so years, but you're an author, you're a pastor, you're a mother, and all sorts of other stuff, I'm sure. Kind of give me your background.
Yeah, I grew up in the North Woods of Wisconsin, chickadee country, definitely black-capped chickadee country. And I've been here in Southern California for about 10 years now, married. And my husband and I are both pastors at our church. So we are saving up for all the therapy our kids will probably need one day. But it's a great life. We serve the church here. We're at a Presbyterian, a PCUSA church. We have three kids. And, creating beautiful things and putting hope out into the world are the things that give me energy. So I write, I have that little birding podcast called The Thing with Feathers, which is a line borrowed from Emily Dickinson, hope is the thing with feathers, and birds are also the thing with feathers. So I really enjoy when I can find little pockets of time to write or create. And even more than that, I enjoy the time I can get outside. And after growing up in Northern Wisconsin, where it really is frozen pretty solid 5 or 6 months of the year, to be here in Southern California, where we have 8 species of hummingbirds, and I can get outside almost every day of the year, is such a treat. And I have a lot of respect for the hardier birders who live places like Maine and northern Minnesota, and they go out every day anyway. I feel like I'm getting this gentle entry into birding where there are usually not mosquitoes biting me and the weather is usually pleasant. And it's been a really kind way to start. It's a very low bar for entry out here. So that's me. When I have my days off, which are Friday, I try to sneak away to the local birding marsh, and it lights me up. It has become such a joy and such a passion.
Is your local birding marsh? I'm fairly familiar with Orange County. My late wife was from Orange County, and from Fullerton, and she got me into birding, so we were both birders, and so I know some of the wetlands down there. Where do you go?
My very favorite is the San Joaquin Marsh. Yeah, there's our local Sea and Sage Audubon house there. They have a lot of educational events, but it is one of those areas that it has marsh and it has ponds and it has woods. And if you stay for a couple of hours, you can see 50 different species of birds. It's magic. It's magic right there. I also love Bolsa Chica. And there are some great hiking trails, Whiting Regional Wilderness Park. And then there's, where was I yesterday? Laguna Niguel Regional Park, which has a really wonderful lake. And you can see a lot of birds that you don't see other places. So it's an embarrassment of riches here. But even just my local patch, there's a park quarter mile from my house where I was trying to track down a Blackburnian warbler. No luck. Everyone else saw it. I didn't see it. But it's amazing what can be right close to home, even in the backyard. We'll see some cool stuff this time of year.
Yeah. But Southern California is really fun birding. Plus, it doesn't rain. It's hardly ever cold. It's really not even hot that often, except the middle of the summer. Yeah, you kind of live in an unnaturally nice place, So living in a desert with civilization is pretty cool. Anyway, enough about Southern California. You just wrote a book, Courtney. Tell me about that. It sort of is it kind of about birding and a lot more, it sounds like.
It is. The book is called Looking Up, A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief. And it's a lot about birds. I do a deep dive into different species of birds in every chapter, but I pair those bird species with a big concept. I do a chapter on vultures, and it's also about death. I do a chapter on pelicans, and it's also about love. So these huge concepts, but found in the way these species interact, the way they live. And I'm really clear at the outset, I'm not a professional ornithologist. I had a professional ornithologist fact check it for me because I said, I don't even know what I don't know. I've done all the research, but I know there are things that I've missed. And he was wonderful. But it's also about just the experience we've all had over these past 4 years of death and grief. My beloved grandfather, who was kind of the nature guy in my family. There's the story of his death and how I processed that, but also serving as a pastor at this fairly large congregation going through COVID. And we, you know, in it to care for our healthcare workers, and because we believe in science, we took our services online for a long time. But then when it was finally safe, the vaccines were out and we were able to come back and meet together, the grief of looking over the congregation and seeing these gaps, the people who had died in the meantime, and we'd experienced those deaths one at a time. You know, usually virtually, you can't be in hospital rooms, so you're talking to the family over the phone or meeting in the parking lot, but to see them all at the same time just hit like a ton of bricks. So I think all of us on this other side of the pandemic are grieving different things, even if it's just lost family gatherings or lost traditions that were put on pause for a season. So the book is this journey toward hope through the beauty of the natural world and how birds saved me, really, and how birds can save so many of us just by paying a little bit of attention and finding our peace through the grace of the natural world. And I find God there. And I think a lot of people who would not say they're religious or spiritual would not say they find God, but would be able to say they find hope or they find peace. And I think birds are a wonderful unifier in that. It's not a preachy book. It's not a book that says, you know, now you have to become a Presbyterian. It's a book that just kind of invites people deeper into the beauty of creation and its healing powers.
You know, that aspect of nature and birding has really become almost a movement lately. I mean, I can't even think of how many different people I've met there and having this podcast. It's really cool having a podcast like this. You're probably learning. You are learning that. I looked at some of your guest list that it gives you license to talk to really cool people. I mean, what's not fun about spending a few minutes talking to somebody that shares an interest and has a different perspective? Anyway, Holly Merker is one of my favorite guests that I had on the show. Holly is has the ornithotherapy movement, the Mindful Birding Network, and she is really very eloquent and has gone through a lot of thought about the whole, how it is not, it doesn't just happen. It's this actual science behind how nature and interaction with nature can actually help you physically and as well as what we know spiritually and cognitively can help you. So anyway, it's a movement that's going on and you're very timely in that. So welcome to the movement.
Thank you. It is a good movement. And I think as we're on the other side of, you know, the difficult pandemic years, we are seeing some silver linings. And one of them is that so many people got into birding. I mean, it rose exponentially, sales of binoculars, sales of bird seed for backyard birds. And I think people really were forced into this season of fear and anxiety and uncertainty and realized we can't just keep going as we have been going. And birding is seeing those effects and all of the trickle-down effects of when people get interested in birding, they're often more interested in conservation. They're more interested in caring for the natural world. They're more interested in what's happening to the planet. All of these positive effects, not just for us emotionally and psychologically and spiritually, but also I think for the natural world, has been really, really beautiful to see. And I love, you know, as a pastor, thinking about those spiritual benefits, I think it lifts our spirits in a way. And it's been, like you said, psychologically proven, these positive health effects of birding. I love Holly's work. She is doing really, really good work in the world. But one of the things I do as a pastor is we are in the season of Lent right now. It goes from this year, from February to ending on Easter, which is March 31st. And we do a practice called A Bird from the Lord, where rather than fasting during Lent, rather than giving something up, which, you know, our folks do whatever they do. Some people give up alcohol or chocolate or whatever. But we also say, hey, maybe you want to take on a spiritual practice. Go out somewhere or sit near a window for 10 minutes and look for birds. That's it. And see what happens inside you as you sit quietly. See what happens in your heart, in your soul, in your mind. And I've heard so many folks within our church and outside, it's a practice I do on social media as well. So lots of folks join from around the country is they'll say, you know, I've always struggled to pray, but as I'm looking for birds, I'm not just waiting passively, I'm waiting actively. And learning to receive birds as a gift, that you can't make birds appear. You know, we can use pishing, or we can use sound effects, or we can put seed out, but still, every bird that shows up in our field of vision is a gift, and learning to receive them that way and receive so much of our lives that way. Our food is a gift. Our clean air is a gift. Our night's sleep is a gift. Really can be a profoundly transformative thing. And it's been really, really fun to watch. It's become a really ecumenical process. We have, you know, a few rabbis who have joined us, and we have folks who say, you know, I'm not at all religious, but I can spend 10 minutes looking for birds. I think that might be good for me. And it is, it's a beautiful thing. And then I get texts from folks in my church will say, I saw a crow eating a Del Taco wrapper. What does that mean? No, like, it's not like an omen. It's, you know, just experience it and see what happens. But it's been a delight for sure.
It is. It, you know, it can also be an alternative. You know, a lot of people, when they go through a grief, you know, something really awful happens in their life, they turn to really unhealthy behaviors, you know, drugs or alcohol or, you know, other gambling or other stuff that, you know, is unarguably not good for you. My wife passed about 6 years ago or so, maybe. I had sort of stopped working to take care of her towards the last couple of years, and I really didn't feel like going back to work after that. And so I kind of fell into birding I've always been a birder, but I kind of fell into birding as an obsession. You know, I mean, I got up every day, I went birding, I just traveled, I just birded my brains out for like a year and a half, every day, almost all day. And I knew it wasn't, you know, maybe the best thing to be doing all the time. But, you know, I saw a counselor and all that stuff you do. And it was a healthy obsession, you know, And it kind of gave me that year or so to process and settle down and get better without really doing any harm. So it was, there are a lot of good things can happen from birding. And for me, that was one. I've kind of, after talking to Holly and some other people, I've become a more intentional birder. There's a lot of cool things that can happen through talking to other people and meeting things. So it's cool. Totally cool. Looking back and looking forward, birding has always been good for me.
I agree. It can be such powerful grief work. I talk to a lot of birders who they first got into birding, or they got more into birding after the death in a family. It really is. You get outside, which is good for you, and you start looking up, which is good for you. And you spend time in beauty and in quiet and in solitude. And these are such healing things. And our current American culture kind of has this idea that, great, someone died and you need a few days to grieve and then you're over it. And that is not how it works. And it felt like after the death of my grandfather, every quarter mile down the trail, I could leave a little bit more of it behind, but also I could pick up some new things. Like, that was a vermilion flycatcher, and how beautiful was that? And that's lifting me a little bit. And it's a lengthy process. My grandfather died almost 2 years ago now, and it's still something I carry. And how much greater is that grief when it's something like the death of a spouse or the death of a child? We're all grieving, and birding is one of the things that can help us make space for that in a way that's not prescribed. It's not time bound. It's just there.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, birding can be really good for you, but it can also be just flat out fun. I have to say, my visits to Southern California with Kay were, I always look forward to them because, gosh, I mean, from where you live, it's not far to places like Borrego Springs. It's not far to San Diego and the great pelagic trips out of San Diego. It's not far to, even, it's not even far to Santa Barbara and that whole, a whole area with, you know, completely different, not completely different, but some really cool stuff. I mean, you know, so, and of course, all of the fabulous wetlands you've got there, and then the canyon trails, it can be really a fabulous birding spot. How has spring migration been going there for you guys?
We're just getting started. We're just on the front edges of spring migration. So I'm kind of in that season of saying goodbye to birds. I'm saying goodbye to the yellow-rumped warblers, and I'm saying goodbye to the white-crowned sparrows, because they're getting itchy. You know, they get a little anxious and they get a little frenetic and then they leave. And so we know that they're about to go. They're still here, but they're about to go. And usually we see that before we see a lot of migrants. We've seen our first few rufous hummingbirds, which mm-hmm. always feel like particularly magical birds. Those are the birds that, if you're counting body length, migrate farther than any other bird in the world for their size. And to think that this little bird who's sitting, you know, on my feeder has shown up here from South America, it just blows my mind. It blows my kids' minds. So we're seeing our first migrants start to come through, but it's still a little bit early for us. Ohio and Michigan and Kansas, you know, they're getting the big flyway right now, but ours starts a little bit later.
Yeah. Yeah. They get in the waterfowl flyway, maybe it's early for pastorns. But yeah, I haven't thought too much about Southern California at this time of year. I've been there, yeah, your winter visitors they're starting to disperse, and the neotrops are just beginning. You're probably getting some orange-crowned warblers moving through by now.
Yep, seen a couple
and
of
some
those.
Some of the early ones. Shorebirds, probably not much yet. Probably not much yet. Yeah, okay. So you've got a lot to look forward to in the next month or two also. What is, I have to say, the one time I've really stayed away from Southern California is in the summer. Who wants to go to Southern California in the summer? Unless you're a surfer or something. But anyway, what's birding like there in the summer?
It is a bit quieter. You know, we have a lot of birds that stay year-round, but they all get quieter and their colors are a little bit muted. And that's one of the reasons I was talking to, who was I talking to? Someone out of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, who they were saying, we're really pushing backyard bird counts in summer, especially places like Southern California, because the birds get so quiet and it does get pretty hot and pretty arid. It's our fire season. So sometimes you just don't even want to breathe the air. You don't want to be outside. And she said, we really need those counts, even if it's, you know, just quote unquote house finches, we want to know how many there are. So I do try to still go out during the summer, but it really becomes more important to go early or to go late, because you just won't see as much during the course of a day because it is really hot and that sun is really harsh. So the early morning birding, the late birding, and then the shore birding, like you said, the shore birds don't care. They warm up too much. They just take a little dip and shake it off. But most of our ducks migrate out in the summer. We don't have a lot of ducks left. So summer is our slow season, but it has its unique joys. You know, there are special birds that you'll see more of in the summer. We see black-chinned hummingbirds here in the summer, which are really special. So it's different, and it does force me out of bed before 6 a.m., which is something.
That's nice. Yeah. It's also must be a great time for you to go visit family back north.
Yes. And that is what we try to do, is if I can get to Wisconsin or if I can get to Michigan during the summer and see this wonderful array of birds that to them are so normal. But I get excited for cardinals. I get excited for blue jays and ruby-throated hummingbirds. We don't have those. Bald eagles. Every once in a while, we get a migrant bald eagle and all the birders out here lose their minds. But I grew up in a town called Eagle River. We were lousy with eagles. And it's great to get back there and see those different birds. I try to take a trip every September or October to my friend who lives in Massachusetts and get out in those eastern woods and see so many things that we don't see in the Midwest or the West Coast. So you're right. It does change travel. It does change travel for the better.
Yeah, for sure. You know, for up here in Washington, we have, you know, like 2 months that are just fabulous weather. July and August are just, it doesn't get better than July and August in the Puget Sound. I mean, it hardly rains. It's, you know, 85 on a hot day and 70 on a cool day, and it's just fabulous weather. So I usually kind of stay close to home that time of year. The time for me to get out of here is, you know, January, February, yucko. You know, you race around the first 2 weeks of the year, get your year list going, then get out of Dodge. It's for me, now that I'm retired, that's my game plan. But anyway, it's fun to hear somebody from, I hadn't really thought too much of what if Southern Californians do for their birding travel and their time of year. Yeah, it's kind of completely backwards. Or maybe I've got it completely backwards. I'm not sure. Switching subjects a little bit. Have you been to the San Diego Birding Festival? That was the first birding festival I ever went to.
Yeah, I was just there a couple of weeks ago and it was magic. I could only spare a day. Our kids are young. They were in basketball and things and I had to get back, but I was there all Friday and it was a wonder. I saw over 100 different species of birds and met some new friends. And San Diego, it's so close to where we are in Orange County. You know, it's
Yeah.
usually less than an hour's drive, but you see birds that we never see this far north, reddish egrets. And you know, it was really fun. And one of the best parts for me as a fairly newbie birder about a birding fest is to go out with a guide. So to go out with, you know, there were 15 of us and two guides, and not just the guides, but some of the folks on the trip who'd been birding for 40 years. You know, one of them found a Townsend's warbler in a tree that the guide didn't even find. So to be able to learn from folks and just soak in this knowledge is such a gift. So it is a great birding fest. If you're out here in end of February, you should definitely check it out. My other favorite birding fest is the Cape May Bird Fest out in New Jersey in the fall. I went to that this fall and
Wow.
it's like Disneyland for birders. It was so phenomenal. I called my husband and said, "I'm so sorry, I'm not coming home. I'm going to live here forever now." He said, "Please come home." But the amount of expertise and the way that that peninsula funnels birds, it's like a warbler cul-de-sac, was just so incredible. So if you're going to check out a birding fest, San Diego and Cape May are my top two for sure.
Yeah, I haven't been to the festival at Cape May, but I went. Pete Dunn taught a hawk identification weekend seminar sort of thing. It was late. It was falcon migration time. I don't remember, maybe the end of September, early October. This is, oh, several years ago, maybe 8 or 10 years ago. I don't remember. But oh my word, the hawk watch was great, but just what was happening? We're sitting there in the hawk watch, and it's kind of maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and things have slowed down, and not much is happening. And Pete says, "Okay, everybody has to go to the butterfly triangle." I'm thinking, "What is the butterfly triangle?" And I said, "Why?" He said, "Just go, you'll know." So we race over to the butterfly triangle. Is it Crosley, the Crosley author who writes the bird ID books? I can't remember his first name, Crosley. Anyway, he is there, and he's been bird banding, and he has in hand a Bicknell's thrush and a gray cheek thrush. And he's putting on this lecture about, "Oh, anyone who says these birds look alike is just not looking carefully." He says, "See, this bird has this, and this bird has this." And he shows us all a 10-minute lecture. He goes on. After about 10 minutes, the person next to me says, "And which one is which?" It was like the things that were so obvious to him were like, "God, these look identical." It was just fun. And then the morning flight, we got up one day, a couple of days, and went to the morning flight. And one day it was ridiculous. Just, I mean, birds just zipping by so fast you couldn't even. And they're identifying them, chip notes and flight shapes and stuff. It was just really fun to be around that kind of energy and expertise and, of course, birds. So, yeah, Cape May in the fall is pretty special. So I want to make sure we get back to your book before we wrap up, Courtney. You wrote this book. Again, tell us the name of the book and how people can find it. And if I'm going to buy the book, what's the best way to buy the book for you? I mean, I know Amazon is maybe the easiest way for people to buy books, but it might not necessarily give the best profit back to the author.
That is such a kind question. I appreciate that, Ed. Yes, the book is called Looking Up, A Birder's Guide to Hope Through Grief. And you can find it on Amazon, you know, like anything, you can find anything on Amazon. But for me, buying it through my publisher, which is ivypress.com, or I've just discovered, apparently all my bookish friends have known about this for years, but there's a site called bookshop.org. And that's like Amazon, but for independent bookstores. So they all kind of band together and you can get pre-releases there. The prices are really good. Shipping is really affordable. And it's a way to support independent bookstores, but at one centralized location. So I'm telling everyone I know about
I'd
bookshop.org.
never heard of that. That's cool.
Right? I don't know if that's best for me as an author, but it's best for independent bookstores. And I support that as well. So it's a great spot.
Good. So people can go to ivypress.com or bookshop.org. And I think you have a website that has links to that sort of stuff too, don't you, Courtney?
I do. My website is Courtney B, B as in boy, CourtneyBEllis.com. And the reason for that is when I first started my website, CourtneyEllis.com, which would be so much easier, was the website for a lingerie model. That is not me. Don't go there.
Okay.
Courtney B. Ellis.
I have a crazy stories like that. I have a nephew who has a name that is a porn star's name. And so if you just Google him, you can be like, oh,
right.
It's so not him. That's not him at all.
I don't even know if that's still that website. I have not checked, but mine is CourtneyBEllis.com. You can also, I'm on Twitter at Courtney Ellis, Instagram, Threads. I get around, but I love to connect with folks online too.
Okay, Courtney, thank you so much for being a guest today. I hope listeners enjoy your book and great birding. I envy you a little bit being in Southern California sometimes. A lot of times, no, I love it here too, but I have really fond memories of my in-laws' family in SoCal. And what town are you from?
I live in Mission Viejo.
Mission Viejo. Okay, good. It was Anaheim Fullerton that I used to go to all the time. Anyway, Courtney, thank you so much. You have a great day. Take care.
Thanks, Ed.
Well, that wraps up the Bird Banter Podcast, episode number 171 with Courtney Ellis. I hope you enjoyed hearing Courtney's story and find inspiration and hope from her love of birds and birding. Please let me know if you have guests you want to hear from on future episodes. Leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast feed. I love the feedback and look forward to hearing your comments. On the next episode, the guest will be Joshua Colville, a Montana birder, who's also a guide for both his own Montana Birding Company and for George Armistead's birding tour company, Hillstar Nature Tours. Josh was a lead guide on my recent trip to the Santa Martas in Colombia. I talked about that trip on episode 169 just a few weeks ago. The next episode with Josh should drop in about 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. Until next time, good birding and good day.